Grace, the Amy Santiago of Royal Bloggers.
And I'm Jessica, the Dorothy Sporanath of Royal Bloggers.
And we'd like to welcome you to On Air, the podcast where two cynical Brits discuss the latest royal news and the truth behind the stories. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the On Air podcast. Some things have actually happened this week. So we are talking about things that did not happen 500 years ago, but in fact happened mere days ago, which is so close for us. And obviously we have done and covered and spoken about a lot of birthdays on this podcast, particularly 18th birthdays. And we're reaching the end of the current batch of heirs or soon to be heirs turning 18. So we had to cover Princess Leonor of Spain's 18th birthday before we have to take a 6-year sabbatical or however long it is till the next 18th birthday.
Yeah, I mean, this is your fault entirely, but Grace pointed out to me that the next 18th birthday isn't going to be till like 2030, by which time some of the current 18-year-old lot could be married. So that's terrifying.
Yeah, that's very traumatic for me. I can't even reply to that. I was like, traumatized.
Even though it was entirely your fault, because you're the one who pointed it out. If it hadn't been for that, I would have been like, oh yeah, the next one will be next year or the year after, and nobody will ever get married because they're all 12, so it's fine. But no. So we're both just, as every single time we have a birthday episode, it's basically just us going, but they look really grown up, and we feel really old. And so that applies to this as well.
Yeah, this one, I think I felt particularly shocked because in my head, Leonor is still 13. So I was like, no, you're all wrong. The whole thing is wrong. You got it wrong.
So Leonor's birthday was on the 31st of October. I'm going to cast my mind back to how I felt on the 30th of October. Actually, to be fair, I watched all of this on the 3rd of November. So maybe I'll cast my mind back to how I felt on the 2nd of November. and just think about what I was feeling at the time and what I was expecting going into it. So I think going into it, I was expecting it to be, I'll be honest, boring.
Fair enough. Yeah, I really wasn't expecting very much. Like, before anything was announced at all, I wouldn't have been surprised me if they kind of glossed over the whole event. Yeah. And then they announced, obviously, a few things in advance, and they announced them in a very boring way. But yeah, I very much had no expectations at all coming into this. And I think it's because for a really long time, or around about the time when I started getting involved in the kind of, in the royal sort of watching sphere, there was a lot of talk about how we never ever saw Leonor or Sophia, her little sister. So in my head, I was like, they're just not going to do anything.
So yeah, going into it, neither of us had particularly high hopes that this was going to be a jazzy, exciting event. They did do a little bit of kind of stuff in the lead up to the actual event as well. That's a pretty common place that, you know, they'll often, royal families will often release sort of photographs of the royal throughout the years as they're celebrating their 18th. And they did that with Leonor. Look, they're cute photographs. Well, there's a couple of reasons why it was not as successful for me. One is Casa Real, which is the royal family's website. Well, that's the name for the royal family, but the website is Casa Real. absolute garbage. If you're gonna, and then they don't really have like an Instagram. I don't know. I just couldn't find the actual photographs.
No, I heard that they'd released some. I just assumed when I saw a lot of people posting the same pictures, I assumed they were the new ones, and not just everyone being like, this is a cool picture from 5 years ago, we're going to post. But I'm still not entirely sure whether I have even seen the right pictures.
Well, I think that's actually the other part of why I didn't really find it very successful. One was that I couldn't find the photographs myself anyway, but the other was that a lot of the photographs, probably the majority of the photographs that were released, they hadn't been seen before, or they hadn't been released before, but they were photographs from official photo shoots or from official events that just, like, you know, their photographer had taken them and they hadn't been released, but we'd all seen them at this event in the past and had tons of photographs from other photographers. There wasn't like a large number of sort of candid ones.
Yeah, I think there was this one World Cup photo and I saw it. And then it must have taken me till about the third or fourth time I saw it that I twigged that it was one of these newly released photos. And then it took me forever to be like, oh, okay, this is actually a new photo.
I always feel like I'm being really spoiled when I kind of am like, oh, I don't like this particular photograph that you released. But that is how I feel. You will have felt like these were photographs you'd already seen, because I don't necessarily pay attention to the angle that a photographer is using. I just pay attention to what they're wearing and what they're doing. So if it comes from the same event, whether or not it's the same angle or pose that I've seen before, it doesn't really feel new. So yeah, it didn't make me more excited. I wasn't angry or anything like that, but it didn't make me think, oh yes, the event is coming, I'm so excited.
I think there was like one officialer photo released like a couple of weeks before that they used on official merchandise, on tea towels, I assume.
Yes.
That
yes.
means, which is very nice. And I assumed that was going to be a precursor to a lot more photos being released. And then clearly I was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just a bit more low key going into it. So it kind of, you know, as just before I watched the event, I was kind of like, well, you know, what I've seen so far is fine, but it's not that exciting and it's not very well communicated. So my standards were not massively high. For the big day itself, 31st of October arrived. And I watched the live stream in Spanish, which like every single other live stream about royal events is 5 hours long. And yet about an hour of that is actual stuff that's happening that's relevant. Most of it is just spectators or commentators looking at live streams of a crowd waving Spanish flags and saying things. So, you know, I like that unifies all of us across the world. No matter which royal family we follow or no matter where we're from, we will all have to sit through a 5 hour live stream, 4 hours of which is not actually interesting at all.
Yeah, we all have to suffer equally.
Yeah. So it started off with kind of a little bit of a parade through the street. The royal family arrived in a car, a Rolls Royce, I think, accompanied by the Royal Escort Squadron. So lots of military dudes on horses and bikes and things like this.
The word squadron always makes me think of planes. And sadly, there were no planes involved.
That would have been cool, just a little plane landing in the middle of Madrid. But yeah, so they arrived and sort of, you know, it was a little bit of a longer journey. They got to be in the car with kind of, it has, you know, big windows and things. So before they'd even kind of stepped out of the car and we'd seen them properly, they got a moment to kind of wave to all of the people who had gathered in the streets of Madrid, which, you know, I like a good wave.
It's like, it was in a weird way, it was like the public part of the event was her waving in a car, but it was also felt very right for Spain and for Leonor, of what we know of her. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, we could see her. She was waving, she was interacting. That was it.
Yeah. I think it set the tone quite well of like, this is actually going to be quite grand. I can't think of any other 18th birthdays that have had like a procession through the streets accompanied by the military in quite such a grand way.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting the military bit there at all. I don't know if that was announced in advance or not, but when there was all these marching soldiers, I was like thinking, is this from today? Or is this like flashback to Felipe's coronation? Like, I was really confused. But no, she got the full military shebang.
That's what they call it, the official term, the full military shebang. But when they arrived, they got out of the car, and this is where I've got the fashion. And I'm just going to rattle through the fashion quite quickly. Sorry to Felipe. You wore I don't even remember if he wore a suit or a military uniform. I barely looked at him.
He wore a suit.
He wore a suit.
He's wearing tails. Yeah.
He wore a suit. I just look at his handsome face, so I don't pay attention to what he's wearing. So he wore some stuff. But anyway, so Letizia I got first, and she was wearing, we'll post a link to the photographs and things from the day, but she was wearing a blue Carolina Herrera dress. It's not my favorite dress. I'm just going to say that. I don't hate it or anything, but it's not my favorite. However, she wore it just a couple of weeks ago. And I actually really like that, because I feel like Letizia can't like decide the narrative of the event. She can't control the press. She can't tell other people what to think or say or anything like that. There's very limited amount of things that are within her control. And one of those things is what she wears. And so the fact that she wore something that we've all seen like 2 weeks ago kind of made it feel like she was doing whatever she could to not be the center of attention.
Like, she looked, obviously, as she always does every time she wears anything, she looked amazing. But it also, I think because we've seen it so recently, it wasn't like her most fabulous outfit. Everyone wasn't like, wow, look at Letizia. Like, she, because normally that if there's a selection of royal women, people go, wow, look at Letizia's wearing. Also others. It was a good balance of you know, being herself, but also being like, as much as possible, be like, yep, I am not going to grab the attention by wearing something that they can't, like, be like, why is she wearing tracksuits? But also not being flashy.
Yeah, exactly. It was a good balance. Like, ultimately, I think this conversation comes up a lot with, like, Kate and things about, like, people saying, oh, well, she could just wear suits and then the focus won't be on her fashion all the time. And then she wears suits and everyone's like, why is she wearing suits all the time? This is so boring. She should wear other things. So it's very difficult to please everybody all of the time. So the next person I had on my list was Infanta Sofia, who is the younger sister of Leonor. And she wore a cape dress from Erdem. I really, really enjoyed it, unsurprisingly, because I love a good cape dress. She's the younger sibling, and so she's still a child. And this dress felt much more youthful and fun because it had like a shorter hem and she didn't wear heels. She wore like little ballerina flats. So it felt more youthful and appropriate for a child, but it didn't feel childish. It didn't feel like a little child's outfit. So I thought she struck a really good balance.
Of the young royals, Sophia's fashion is like the most sort of exciting to me because it always feels very suitable for the occasion, but also suitable for like a teenager who's not the heir to the throne, but is sort of very close to the heir to the throne. And it reminds me a lot of Letizia's fashion in the way that it's kind of like relatable, but aspirational at the same time, like fancy relatable.
Fancy relatable, yeah. Yeah, there's also like a bit of a twist with her style. Like for royals, like Letizia is one of those ones who will try new things out occasionally and do, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Like when she wore that dress with a big hole and just over the knee for no reason. That was odd. But, you know, I think she, you know, she's willing to try things out. I think Sophia's definitely got that quality as well of like occasionally. She seems, there's a bit of like an edginess. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
And then the woman of the hour, it feels very strange to call her a woman because she's still a tiny, tiny baby in my mind. but it was Leonor, who wore a white trouser suit from, I'm going to pronounce this wrong. I actually don't know if I've written it down correctly. Sastreria Cerna, who is a tailor, a men's tailor, who made her dad's wedding outfit, I believe, and possibly some other things for him. Leonor chose something that was made by a tailor who typically works with men. I really enjoyed that.
There's such a tendency for like young royal girls to be like, what did your mum wear? And for her to be like, no, this is my dad and this is what my dad did because he's the king and I'm the next queen. It's very sort of a very sort of clever way to make a nod to her dad through her clothes without literally wearing his old suits.
She wore a white trouser suit and her mum, Letizia, wore a white trouser suit for the photo call that they did when they got engaged. So obviously neither of them, her mum was a news journalist, so she was well known in the public, but this was like her first appearance as a future royal, as the future queen of Spain. She wore this like very chic white trouser suit. And then almost exactly 20 years later, we have Leonor wearing a white trouser suit for her first, she's, you know, obviously been in the public eye her entire life, but this was her first engagement as an adult, as the future queen of Spain. And so I like that there was kind of these dual nods, partly to her mum and partly to her dad. I think it left her looking really like strong and mature, but without being old fashioned. I thought she looked great. It was really chic.
I think, you know, a lot of the young girl royals who are now adults have worn a lot of white for the 18th. And I think, I know Elizabeth did, and I know Ingrid did as well. And it's that very much that kind of like, it's such a strong colour. People wear white for weddings. People wear white for turning 18, apparently. It's a choice. And I think there's definitely something in it being a white suit and not being, you know, red or something. I'm trying to think of a colour that's Spanish. And I was like, red is on the flag, that'll do.
Yeah, it's a colour that stands out against a lot of backdrops. So it makes it very clear that like this person is the focus of attention if they're wearing a full white outfit. I think the suit being made by a, you know, professional men's tailor as well gives it a kind of very powerful energy to it. And yeah, it's also, it's a very brave thing in general to wear white because obviously there's like all of the religious connotations and all of that sort of stuff, but also just like, you have to go outside in it and people outside have sticky fit hands, and there's smoke, and there's horses, and there's all sorts. And I'd be terrified of it getting covered in mud. So we've done the fashion. They'd arrived at this point, obviously, because that's when we saw all of the outfits. The next bit was Felipe reviewed the Battalion of Honor, which is basically just different branches of the military who were all there in their little gangs standing to attention. And he just walks past and looks at them.
I was watching it on the live stream and I was like, what is happening? I was like, is this the review? Because he is literally just walking past. And I thought he was going to get a flag from one of them and he didn't. And I was like, a bit sad.
The Queen did that all the time, where she'd just walk in front of some troops.
Because she tended to do them on like a courtyard, whereas Felipe was very much walking down a road, like on a pavement.
Yeah. I think that's the purpose of them anyway, is to like just, if there is something wrong, theoretically, the idea was that the monarch could say that they're not doing it right. But I don't think they actually do most of the time in practice. So anyway, he walked around and he looked at a lot of military people and that was about it. And then they got to the gates of the Congress building where all of this was happening, and they were met by various government figures. I won't go into detail about everybody, but and they posed for some photographs with the press pack. And then there was an interesting bit in that I managed to pick out of the very poorly translated subtitles that were on the YouTube video I was watching, that the door they went through to get into the Congress building is apparently like a special door that is only used for the most important occasions. They refer to them as the solemn occasions. Which, I think really sets the tone, much like kind of having this military procession to get to the Congress building. It really set the tone for, like, the whole day of, like, this is a very, very important day.
Even though, you know, at this point, all she's literally done is sat in a car and then walked up some stairs. But she felt really like, wow, this is important.
Mm-hmm. So then they walked into the main Congress building, where they got an exceptionally long standing ovation. There was a lot of like formality in this section of it. So the Secretary of the Congress of Deputies read out a formal statement that basically just said, Leonor's turning 18. And so he has called the houses together for Leonor's swearing in as per the Constitution. He named the articles of the Constitution that were relevant. I always find these things funny because they have to happen in these sort of like ceremonial constitutional events. But it's like, everyone already knows why you're there, guys. They have to say them as part of the schedule of the day. But I just think you can tell that they were made a long time ago, when that it might have been the case that people genuinely weren't sure why they were being brought together, and now they just still continue to say them, because like, my dude, everyone who's in that room knows why they're in that room.
Yeah, I like the part where one of them was like, we agreed a week ago that we were all going to be here. Yeah. So we're here. Okay, that's redundant.
Yeah, exactly, thanks for that. It was stunning new information. Yeah, so there was a bit of that. And then we had a speech from, I'm going to pronounce this incorrectly probably, but Francina Armengol?
Yeah, that's what I would say. Francina Armengol.
I don't know why I keep saying them and then being like, is that how you would say it? Because it's not like you have any more idea than I do, really. She's the president of the Congress of Deputies. And she gave a speech, basically. Now, it was a tad too long. And also, I don't know anything about this woman. So if she's like one of those terrible, I don't think so based on what she said, but if she's one of these terrible far-right politicians and I'm saying a nice thing about her, I'm really sorry. I'm just judging her based on this speech. But it was a really good speech.
I spent the entire time I was doing my research being like, I don't understand anything about Spanish politics. I didn't know they had an acting prime minister. I was like, where's the real one? I'm so confused. And it made everything very confusing because I kept finding people and Googling like, what is the Congress of Deputies? And it would be like, you know, the famous Congress of Deputies. I don't know what that means. No idea.
You can't just say something is famous and think that explains what it is.
It doesn't help. So yeah, if anyone does know, like a deep understanding, a really easy breakdown of the Spanish political system, please let me know, because I don't know it at all.
Yeah, it would have been nice if Leonor had done a Christian and done a documentary about how Spain works, because that actually probably would have been quite interesting.
Yeah, it would be much more useful.
Yeah, I'm not going to read out the whole speech, but basically she talked a bit about how it has been about 45 years pretty much since the government approved the Constitution of Spain, and then and also, you know, 30 however many years, 37 or whatever, since Felipe turned 18. And she kind of talked about how since those two moments, the way that Spain has adapted to become a modern nation. And I think if you want a brief overview of Spain, it's a really great place to go, because she talked about like joining the EU, she talked about women's rights, she talked about the Olympics when they were in Barcelona. It was basically just like a little everything Spain has done in 45 years in a nutshell, or everything positive Spain has done in the last 45. So it was a really, really good whistle stop tour of like how has Spain come from the founding of the constitution to being this kind of modern country? And then she it was a lot about like the constitution and how Spain is, and not very much about Leonor. But then she did at the end kind of bring it back and say that Leonor is a perfect exemplification of the modern Spain that has been built over the last 45 years. And you know, that young people are incredibly important to the future of Spain. And then she directly quoted from one of Leonor's previous speeches, which I thought was a really lovely touch.
I think this is going to come up a lot later, but Leonor's speeches have always been phenomenal.
Yeah, and I didn't appreciate that, to be honest.
I remember her very first speech and being like a bit blown away. But I didn't know if I was blown away because it was a good speech or because she was literally 13.
Yeah.
But then I did go back and watch her first speech after I watched this just to see it. I was like, no, it was a good speech. It genuinely was.
But yeah, so I thought it was a really strong speech from Francina or Francino.
It's kind of a theme that happens throughout the day, but there's a real almost like continuous tying back to Spain and to Felipe throughout the entire day. It kind of just like loops around the three of them, which must have been intentional. And if it wasn't, it was incredibly good luck because it just came across so sort of symbolically strong. It was very impressive.
But then after Francina's speech, then came the moment we'd all been waiting for. So as per the constitution of Spain, Leonor, as heir to the throne, stepped forward to give an oath. And it's a very short oath, but she said, "I swear to faithfully perform my functions, keep and enforce the constitution and the laws, respect the rights of citizens and the autonomous communities, as well as loyalty to the king." So it's, you know, very short, but that's the actual thing that she had to do today, is to say that thing. And she did it very well. She didn't stumble over any of her words.
I did not realise how short it was going to be.
Yeah.
Until I was like, that's it. Okay. That was like literally a minute.
Yeah. How have you managed to spin this out into a whole day, guys? There was a very sweet moment where after she'd said loyalty to the king, she looked up at Felipe and kind of gave him a little nod. And oh my goodness, the look on his face from this moment on, for like the next 45 minutes, to be honest, he looked, I've never seen somebody look so proud. It was so sweet.
He was quite literally like on the verge of bursting into tears.
Yeah,
like everything from like this moment on, he was just like, "That's my little girl, yeah, grown up."
Yeah, I think like for his like stability and ability to keep things together, the worst thing she could have done was to give that little nod to him, because it was just like he'd been holding it together, and then as soon as she did that, he was like, "Right, okay, I'm done. No,
not gonna pretend." Just cried a cupboard.
Bless Felipe, makes him even more attractive for his emotional vulnerability, you know.
Yeah, he's just the perfect man, honestly.
Yeah, he really, except he's married, but you know, whatever. That didn't stop the last one. Yes, so after the actual oath had happened, it was very short. Francina then sort of acknowledged the oath and then led like a three cheers for Spain, the king, and the constitution, I think it was. And yeah, and then sort of she'd done the thing that she needed to do. It had been officially acknowledged by all of the important political people who were there. And so she got to go back to her family, where her parents gave her some kisses, to sort of, you know, kisses on the cheek. And Felipe was almost in tears. And this was the second of the exceptionally long standing ovations. Like, this went on for, even they started to look uncomfortable after a while, because they were like, "Oh, this is going on for a really long time."
Yeah, it was must have been about a 5 minute standing ovation.
Yeah.
And at the beginning they're all like obviously smiling and be like, "Oh, thank you." And by the end of it, Leonor was like, "Okay, stop. I need to sit down."
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, the person who's being clapped also has to stand for the entire time. It would be exhausting. And yeah, so actually there was another thing that this didn't actually happen in the live stream I was watching. I didn't see this until after the whole event. They didn't show you it actually happening. But at the moment that she kind of swore the oath to the constitution and it was accepted, there were bells that were ringing out at cathedrals across Spain, including in Asturias. So the heir to the Spanish throne is known as the prince or princess of Asturias, which I enjoy. I love a good bell ringing as well, even though I'm a little, you know, atheist who'd burn if I've stepped foot in a church. I still like a good bell ringing.
For big royal events, like 99% of the population are just like doing their normal everyday thing, and something like a bell ring, like you can hear bells from miles away, so you'll be like, "Oh yeah, that's Leonor's thing, anyway, back to school. Like, it's just one of those little things where people just get a little bit more involved, even though you might live out in the sticks and have absolutely nothing to do with what's going on.
Yeah. It's also very impressive that they always manage to do these things. Like, it's lots of royal events will have like cannons that go off at the exact moment that something happens. And it's like, they are very well timed, these bell ringers, the unsung heroes of the event. So yeah, that was actually the main part of the day over. After watching, at this point, I think I'd been watching the live stream for about 2 hours, and the actual thing was one sentence.
But in a weird way, the day really picked up from this point onwards, because so much more happened in the next, like, same amount of time. They just were like, oh, and now everything else that, like, is fun, we'll just do now. So it's good.
So then after the sort of the big day, or the big moment of the day had happened, they then went into what felt to me like a corridor.
Like, in, I don't know if you've seen Parks and Rec. Yes. They walked down a lot of corridors with things in book, like glass cages on the side. That's the vibe it was giving me. Like, I expected it to be a raccoon, and it was a book, but I thought it might be a raccoon.
What government building doesn't have a raccoon in a glass case?
Just assume they all do.
Yeah. It was in the corridor where Leonor was given medals from each of the chambers of the government. So they basically just came and put them around her neck.
I think it was really, I just thought it was really funny because Francina gave her one of the medals, and she did the thing that like normal people do when they put medals, like a proper, because it's like a clip-on medal. It wasn't like something to put over someone's head. So she kind of went behind her, like when you're putting on the necklace, and clipped it up from the back. And then the other person who did it from the other Congress was a man, and he was just kind of like, over the head, off we go.
I imagine it was quite awkward for him because she's like an 18-year-old girl. So I imagine he's probably like, well, I can't go and stand behind her and clip it up because that would be, you know, that's something I would do with my wife. That's not something I would do with Leonor. So I'll just put it over her head. That'll be the most inoffensive way of doing it. but it did mean that like, as soon as the official people had stepped aside, Felipe and Letizia were like right in there trying to like get her ponytail out of the way and fix the medal so they were sitting straight. So clearly he did not do a good job at all.
I liked that because they both went as soon as it was done, but like as soon as Fantina was like put that first necklace on Leonor, Felipe's arm was twitching. He was like, I need to sort that hair out right now, this is so stressing me out. He just could not keep himself away. He was like, God's help, this is stressing me out, guys.
You know, I was surprised that Felipe was the one who was like, right, no, sorry, we've got to fix the ponytail, we've got to get the medals straight. Letizia was right in, and I knew that she would be because she's very like poised and wants everybody to look like presentable and whatnot, but the fact that Felipe was so like, guys, you've put a ponytail in the wrong place, was very funny.
Yeah, and he did it all the way throughout the day from that point onwards. He was like, right, I'm focused on this ponytail now. I can imagine that was the only way he could stop himself crying. He was like, I've got to make sure her ponytail's okay, that is my job, I can't let her let this down, I've got to go.
If I just look at the ponytail, I'm not gonna cry. But yeah, so she received these medals from the various houses of Congress who had been in the building. Then they went to sign the Book of Honor of the Congress. Now, I expected this to be like a normal thing that royals do, where they go and they put their signature down and then they go away again. But Felipe wrote like a whole page, a handwritten page long message. He was there for like 10 minutes writing.
I know. He wrote like an entire essay and he was tearing up.
Yeah.
And I still don't know what this Book of Honor is because I tried Googling it and there it just put me to like Dungeons and Dragons websites and I don't think it's that. So I've got no idea what this book is for, but he wrote a full-on essay.
I assumed it was like a guest book, like a fancy guest book. Like if the Queen went to visit, or King Charles or any other king or queen went to visit Spain and went to the Congress building, they would sign their name. But it seemed like it was maybe a bit more than that because normally it would just be like, it's very nice to be here. And then the message would have been written in advance by somebody else. And all you have to do is write your signature. You don't normally write an entire page long message. So it did kind of feel like when somebody has a really great time in a hotel and they leave a really long message in the guest book and everyone else has to go on to the next page. It felt a bit like that.
Yeah. And I almost wonder if he wasn't supposed to write that much because he wrote like this entire page. And then Letizia was writing for about like half a minute. She was like, probably like, yeah, great day. And then Leonor, she had to go on to the next page to sign. Did he write too much? Was it all supposed to go on that one page? And then, because they had to like flick the page back at the end to be like, Leonor, look what your dad wrote.
I really hope that they release it or something, because I mean, I don't know if that's the because we don't know what this book is really, so we don't know what the standard protocol is, but I just, maybe this was where he like let out his emotions And was just like, I can't believe that my little girl is turning 18 years old. She was just a little girl yesterday. You know, like, that's how I imagine Felipe sounds when he cries.
He was like, this is the best day of my whole life. I'm so proud. Thank you, everyone. I love the clapping. I love the medal.
Part of you thinks when you look at Felipe that he would be really statesmanlike in that moment, but maybe it was just a moment of him sort of gushing emotionally onto a page. They all got their moment anyway to sign the book, and unlike Charles's coronation, none of them had a fight with a pen, so they're already doing better.
Yeah, it reminded me of my mum and dad's wedding, because they got married when I was 9 in Malta. And they let me and my sister like sign the bottom of the wedding certificate
in our
awful little handwriting.
Oh, that's so cute.
It reminded me of that, where they had to like, we're like, oh, would you like to have a go?
Yeah, oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, oh, they gave me the responsibility of the ring, and they gave my sister the responsibility of the pen. You hold this pen.
I feel slightly disproportionate. You got the ring and she got a pen. Isn't she older than you?
No, I'm older than her.
Oh, okay. I assumed she was older than you for some reason.
Yeah, she would have only been 6, so it doesn't make sense that she wasn't given the responsibility of a ring. But yeah, they were just like, hold this pen from my desk. What's your job?
Yeah, so the next bit they did some more posing for photographs and the compulsory receiving line. This receiving line was only 25 minutes, though. So compared to Christian's 40 minutes, she got off easy.
Solid improvement. Yeah. Mm. I was get to these points in the videos and I'm like, skip, 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 mm-hmm. skip. And then it, like, the live stream kept, like, filming the ceiling for, like, a disproportionate moment of time. And I was like, have I broken the video? Oh, no. No, it's just, like, a 3-minute stretch of them just filming the ceiling. Well, clearly they're, like, cutting into the next scene.
Do you remember when they did that with, when Kate had, I think it was George. No, it can't have been George because I was there. So it must have been Charlotte. And I worked out afterwards that it was because there were other couples who'd had a baby who were coming out of the door and they couldn't show them. But the camera just kept panning up. And I was like, what are you doing? They're not going to be in the sky.
Like the ceiling. It's like this beautiful blue sky. So what do you get?
Very annoying to have to rely on. Well, I mean, my live stream had English subtitles. Well, it had Spanish subtitles. I auto-translated to English. And then about 3/4 of the way through, they just stopped. So I have no idea what happened in that last little bit. So they posed for some photographs and shook more hands with people.
And then it took them forever to get out of the building. Like, it got to the end of the sort of receiving line and I was like, oh, off they go. They're walking towards the steps. And I don't know how long it takes them to get from like the room they were leaving on the inside to that door on the outside, but it took about 5 minutes. So whether they just got chatting or there was like a whole like sprint they had to do, I don't know.
Well, there is just a building that's mostly corridors from what I've seen. So they probably just got lost down one of the other corridors. Yeah, so then they eventually did make it out of the building after going through the obstacle course. And they went outside to kind of watch a short military display. It was quite short. We're not talking like, you know, the Queen's trooping or the Queen's coronation or something where it takes like 17 hours for them to walk past. And, you know, as always, I'm not a massive fan of the military parade thing, but I did quite like it because they kept shouting Viva España. And I hope this is not offensive to Spanish people, but that always reminds me of the Spice Girls song Viva Forever.
That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah, oh, good. Viva Forever. Not their best song, but I was a huge Spice Girls fan. So, so I did give, you know, it was more interesting than the average one because it was short and because occasionally I got a little Spice Girls moment. That's not what they were intending, but.
It turned out before this event, I had no idea what the Spanish national anthem looked like. And every now and then they would place what I could only assume was like, part of the Spanish national anthem, yes. Because it's all music, but every version they did just sounded slightly worse than the one before it, and like by this point it just sounded slightly out of tune. Like, okay, they're getting tired now.
Every song that is played that is a national anthem kind of style of song that is played with those trumpets reminds me of the opening credits to the final season of Blackadder. Because they play the Blackadder it's set in the military, and so they play the Blackadder theme that's in it, all of the seasons, but they play it on trumpets. And at first I was like, this sounds exactly like the Blackadder theme tune. Then I realised, no, it doesn't sound anything like the Blackadder theme tune at all. It's just got brass instruments. And everything with brass instruments sounds like Blackadder to me.
You got to a point where I was listening, I was going to be like, are they just inventing songs now? Or is was like, no, it's the same song they played at. Yeah. It's the same song. They've just played it slightly differently. It's fine.
It's hard when things don't have words. Yes. So it was very, but it was very short, short and snappy. That's how I like my military parades. And then the that part of the day had kind of finished. So they returned to the royal palace for the next part of the day. They traveled back by the same car. So they got to go like a reverse procession and wave to everybody on the way back. And then when they got to the palace, there was sort of another kind of military greeting. I found this bit slightly difficult to follow because the camera kept moving around and I wasn't sure where they were. But I did see that there were royal guards on motorbikes, and that I enjoyed.
I got to the point where I was watching it and then I kept thinking I was seeing the same part over and over again, which I probably wasn't. But because it wasn't like normally for a military procession, they just film it and they like move the camera around, but it was very like cutty and like they were like here and then they were jumping somewhere else. And then at one point I just completely lost track of where Leonor was. I was like, are they in the palace already? I've lost them. Why? There's like no one's watching this anymore apart from me by the look of it.
Yeah.
But yeah. Of the three military processions we've seen so far, this is my least favourite one.
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't know. I might disagree with you there because I really enjoyed, like, there had been guys on motorbikes before, but it was as they always are, which is kind of like there's somebody on a motorbike who's following the procession along just to make sure for like a security perspective. That's quite standard. But this was like they were doing the procession on the motorbikes as if, like if Troop in the Colour had one section of the military that was arriving on motorbikes. They were all in their little formation. And I think that's the modern military for me, guys. Like, get rid of the horses, bring in some Harley Davidsons.
I think we should do that on Troop. Just have the motorbike section. Just like,
we could have a section of them on Segways, a section
scooters.
Scooters, tricycles, penny farthings. We could do a whole range. That's what I'm voting for. Get rid of the horses. Sorry, let the horses run free. And there was a 21 gun salute, which again I do quite enjoy. It feels very ceremonial to have like cannons being fired. We don't fire cannons enough in day to day life.
It's like we just keep cannons in countries just to fire like once a year.
yeah. What use are they? I used to live really close to a military base and I would hear the cannons going off every so often, like I don't know what for, but it was really loud.
Completely off topic now, but I remember watching Trooping and they like cut to the Greenwich Park cannons and I was like, you know what, if I was ever in London I'd go to watch the cannons because that just looks more fun to me.
Yeah,
which like every now and then just throw a cannon, why not? And then I started worrying, I was like, how do they know they're not going to hit someone, because there's a lot of people in London and
that's true.
They're firing something. How does it, I don't understand how it works. I would like someone to tell me. I'm going to start a conspiracy theory that every time they like fire one of these cannons, like people just die and they get dragged off in secret because they got hit by a cannon. They can't tell it from that.
The leading cause of death in the United Kingdom is cannon. I do like it because it kind of, the military part is always uncomfortable for me for various different reasons, but like cannons are old school. They're not taking cannons to the Middle East to kill people. So I don't really have as much of an issue. It also gives a bit of a pirate kind of feel.
Yeah, it does give a pirate feel. More cannons and pirates, please.
And military men on penny farthings and segways.
Yes, of course.
They'd got to the Royal Palace at this point, and then when they got inside, Pedro Sanchez, whose job title I was going to look up, but I did not. Oh, he's the Prime Minister.
There he is, Pedro Sanchez, acting Prime Minister.
There we go. In the translation, it says President, but it does that all the time for like when I'm translating Swedish stuff as well. It'll call somebody the Prime Minister, but they're just a minister. So I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I wrote down President first of all, and then I was like, hang on, there can't be a president. They're literally talking about royal family.
This is why people listen to this podcast, because we're so knowledgeable about royals. We're like, wait a minute, you can't have a president and a... Yes, so he spoke inside anyway. At this point, this is when the subtitles disappeared. So I have absolutely no idea what Pedro said. Sure, it was great, but I couldn't tell you. Don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea. I skipped through that bit. I was like, okay, I've been watching this live stream for a very long time at this point. I want to get to the next bit that's relevant to me.
Yes, so then the next part of the day that was more interesting, and you didn't need subtitles, so it was fine, was Felipe bestowed Leonor with the Order of King Carlos III. Or just Order of Carlos III. And the Order of Carlos III is the highest civilian order. So in other words, it's the highest order which is in the control of the state rather than the control of the kings. Felipe did the actual bestowing, but the decision to give her that was made by the government.
Which is nice. I like that. Although I did get really confused when all the English language press was like, the Order of Charles III. And I was like, this seems odd. And I was like, oh, Carlos III, the actual Spanish king, not the British king that's been on the throne for like half a year.
I know we have a reputation for taking over other countries, but I don't think we're taking over Spain right now.
I was like, I'm fairly sure we've kind of left, us and Spain never really took each other over. It was a whole thing.
Yeah. Yes, so it's a very prestigious thing. She's already got the highest order that is awarded by the monarch, the highest dynastic order, which is the Order of the Golden Fleece, I think.
Yes, she got that when she was 13.
Yes, like Jason and the Argonauts. And it's like a big collar that you put around the neck. So, of course, there was more ponytail moving.
Yeah, Felipe had a job to do and he was going to do it.
Not going to mess up my girl's ponytail. So there was a little bit of that. And I was just like, I just think... I really enjoyed that part of it because I realised that we don't really get to see the actual bestowing of honours onto members of the royal family very often. So like a few years ago, Kate got the Royal Victorian Order and we all found out about it, but there was no photograph of like the Queen giving it to her. We don't know if that even happened or if she just like sent her a text message being like, hey, I'm going to give you the RVO and I'll send you the stuff in the post. You know, it could have been really boring. But other than like... the awarding of with the babies, the Order of the Seraphim in Sweden, where the babies get it and they give it to them on their their christening, which is obviously a very sort of sweet thing because they're a tiny little baby and they get a little ribbon. We don't really see a lot of like the actual process of awarding somebody with an honor. We don't get to see the actual bestowing of it in public very often. And we do quite consistently in Spain. And I realised that's something that I really, really enjoyed, like getting to see the monarch bestow a member of their own family with such an important honour. And I'd like other families to adopt that.
Yeah, because I really like the, it's not nostalgia, but like the sentimentality of like someone in the family doing, like giving an official thing to someone in their family. Like it's just very sweet. But yeah, I always feel like I just want to know how it happens in other families. Like I desperately want to know when, I don't know, like when Edward was made Duke of Edinburgh, was it a text message or did they have like a little dinner party or did anyone have to kneel down or something? I need to know what happened.
Yeah, it's all very eyes wide shut. They have capes and masks and they get together and chant. Like I'm feeding into a conspiracy.
That's what I imagine. I hope it is that.
There are people on the internet, we shouldn't say this, because there are people on the internet who genuinely believe that that's the kind of thing the royals get up to in their private life. So we shouldn't feed into it.
No. But yeah, it was very, and I just like the fact that obviously when they've given Leonor her two orders, she's been, you know, the first time she was a child and now she's like a tiny adult. And she's getting these, they're huge. Like they're not teeny tiny little, you know, MBEs that you get in the UK with it just pinned onto your chest. It's like a Lord Mayor's garb.
Yes.
Which is going to mean nothing to anyone who isn't British. That's no help.
The closest I can think is like when rappers wear chains. It's obviously doesn't look exactly like that at all. Like she doesn't have 50 cent in big diamonds or anything. But it's like it's a weighty thing that would go all the way around someone's neck. Yes. So after that, then we move on to the speeches.
And also just like before they start the speeches, Leonor tried to walk off and Felipe was like, nope, not yet. We've got stuff to do. She was like, great, I'm done.
Where am I supposed to stand? I don't know what's happening. I was like, I relate. Yes. So Leonor gave her speech first. And again, we'll post like the links to the texts of these speeches. Thankfully, I had the text so that the broken subtitles didn't bother me. Because otherwise I would have been like, well, I don't know why anyone's saying. No, this is rubbish. And so at the beginning, she largely reiterated what she'd said in her oath. But she kind of expanded on it a little bit. So, for example, instead of, like, in her oath, she'd said that she swore loyalty to the king. But in this speech, she said that she swore loyalty to the king and then talked about how the crown symbolises the unity and permanence of Spain. And so she was kind of, I felt like what she was doing in that first part of the speech was taking the core of the oath, which was the entire reason anybody was there, that was what the day was about. And she was expanding it to kind of explain what the oath means to her.
She did something about the order of the Carlos III as well. She was like, the motto of this order is this, and I'm going to embody that going forward. And I thought, that's a nice touch, because royals tend not to do it. They tend to be like, I'm honoured to be the dame of the British Empire. I would take this with me going, you know, they don't tend to do that. So I thought it was very sort of, it was a very sort of sensible way, an easy way to be like, I'm not just a princess getting a bunch of titles. Like, I know what this means and I know the significance of it.
Definitely. So I really enjoyed that. And she then kind of set out three sort of key principles for her role as heir to the throne. So one was conducting herself in all areas of her life in a way that advances the interests of the nation, essentially. The second one, behaving in a way that, and I quote, deserves the recognition and appreciation of the citizens. I thought that was a nice mention, given that a lot of the Spanish rules have not necessarily behaved in that way. And then lastly, total and unconditional dedication, always trying to grow as a person with the affection and support of my family. But I really like that because it kind of was building on what she'd done in the first part, which was saying, I took this oath, but this is what that oath means to me. And then I felt like she was really clearly laying out, and these are my key principles that are going to guide me in my role. It was almost like a political campaign speech in a way.
Because it was really good, sort of like something you could look back on. It felt like when you're creating a project and you have to be like, what are the aims of my project? It was like, there they are. This is what her aim is. And she's going to do this to get to the end.
Definitely. And then she ended it by saying, from today, I owe myself to all Spaniards, whom I will serve at all times with respect and loyalty. There is no greater pride. On this important day, which I will always remember with emotion, I ask you to trust me, as I have put my trust in our future, in the future of Spain. And so I think overall, within what she said, it really packed a punch. So it didn't have much of that kind of personal touch to it. It wasn't sort of, you know, here's some personal anecdotes from me and my parents and you know, or here's a personal anecdote from my time at school and how I was really nervous when I started school, like what Christian did in our episode a couple of weeks ago. But it didn't need to, because it was very clear from the beginning that this wasn't the purpose of the speech. The speech wasn't to go for Leonor to go, oh, this is how I am as a person and I'm really normal. And these are some challenges I've had in my life and my family. You know, it was Leonor laying out her vision of what being the princess of Asturias is.
I think, you know, it was really well sort of pitched. Like, she started with, I understand my role. And then it was like, this is my promise going forward. And the last bit, which was my favorite part, which was these kind of like, it was her queen moment. Like when Queen Elizabeth did like, I, you know, from this moment onwards, I pledge myself to your service. It was that moment where in, you know, 50 years, everyone would go, do you remember when Leonor said she owes herself to all Spaniards? Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Yeah.
And it, oddly, completely unrelated to anything else, it really reminded me of after the coronation, at the coronation concert, Prince William gave a speech that was supposed to be about his dad, but very much it was about him. And it gave me the same vibe of being like, that's a speech that people are going to be like, oh, remember when they said this? It felt powerful to listen to. Yeah. And this one was in Spanish. At least William's one was in English when it was going on. It felt powerful in a different language. That's good.
I don't think we covered the coronation concert in our episode. And so therefore I did not watch it. So I don't know this speech, but I'm going to trust you. She is very good at speaking. I mean, as it's always more difficult to judge when somebody's speaking another language, but she didn't seem to stumble over her words. She looked up and looked at people. She wasn't bouncing around like Christian was when he was nervous and giving his speech. So she's obviously already at a young age really strong at delivering speeches as well. It's not just the content that's strong, it's also the delivery.
And what really fascinated me was I did that thing where everyone was posting like these like key moments from all these sort of young 18 royal speeches. And I went back and looked at them all. And what I never sort of registered before was that Ingrid's speech was so good, but it didn't have any of these sort of big sweeping statements in it. It was very much like, this is me. Norway's great. And it was such a phenomenal speech. It didn't feel like it needed it. But all of the other royals, to varying degrees of success, have done these big, like, from today, I am pledging myself to you. Mm. And they're all very good at it. But I do think Leonor's fit within her speech the best. It felt the most natural, whereas if, you know, when we spoke about Christians, it felt a bit like that was a moment of substance in a very substanceless, shiny speech. So it was really interesting to look at them all and be like, interesting.
Yeah.
Intriguing.
I suppose with Leonor, the purpose of the day was her swearing on the Constitution. The fact that she turned 18 was almost incidental to it. So that's why her speech felt very much about like, here I am introducing myself as the future queen. Ingrid is a step further removed. So, and nothing necessarily has to happen on her birthday. So it really was a birthday speech. But I did, I actually felt like Ingrid's speech achieved some of the same things as Leonora's, in that I felt like I didn't necessarily know, like, Ingrid is committing herself to the role as a future monarch, but I got the sense that, like, she really loves Norway and she loves Norwegian values. And so when she was talking about, like, the importance of Norway as an inclusive country and as a democratic country, I felt like, without saying it explicitly, she was saying, and I support these values myself, and I think these are the important things that I'm going to safeguard. So she didn't say it explicitly, but I felt like she was getting to the same point.
They've all done it. Like, all the new 18-year-olds have done these, like, big speeches. But it does just feel so alien. Like, I know, but it feels, like, so bizarre that an 18-year-old... Like, I was 18 not that long ago, and I remember not being giving emotionally dramatic speeches at that point. Like, if someone asked me to stand up on my 18th birthday and, you know, pledge myself to the future of the world or whatever, like, I would be like, that's the most embarrassing thing of all time. But they just get on and do it.
I'm going to disagree with you. Sorry, this is a bit of an in-joke. I'm trying to do this deliberately because somebody said that they really like the podcast, but that we agree with each other too much. And I'm like, I'm sorry that we have excellent opinions. But I'm trying to now disagree with Grace on principle where I can. And actually, at 18, I would have loved the opportunity to give a speech on my 18th birthday. It wouldn't have been a dry eye in the house. I would have been amazing. Nowadays, I'm much more scared of giving speeches than I was when I was younger. But at the time, I was doing it regularly. I was doing it competitively. I was always very good at speaking. So I actually would have been more comfortable doing an 18th birthday speech than a 30th birthday speech. But yes, anyway, after her speech, there was another receiving line. I think in total, they probably did more handshaking than Christian. But it was just broken up into chunks. So he did 40 solid minutes and they did like 25 minutes and then 20 minutes later on. And then, yeah, so they went to this lunch after the receiving line, and the main part of the lunch that was of interest is the speech that Felipe gave to start it off. There is a limit on what you can say about the day. He wasn't going to go in a totally different direction and do something super, super personal. So there's only so many times you can say, this is, the Constitution is important and my daughter is 18, you know. So it felt a little bit repetitive, but he kind of talked a little bit about his own 18th. And then he also expanded, he also took the same framework basically of taking the oath and then kind of expanding on what the oath actually means. But he did it like addressing it to Leonore. This part of the oath, dear Leonore, means this. And so at first I was kind of like, this is a bit repetitive and a bit, you know, she's just said this. And then we also had her say it earlier in a shorter form in the oath. Like, do we really need to hear it again? But I actually, in the end, I did think it was quite nice because it felt like they'd said the oath and then Leonore had the opportunity to say what the oath meant to her as an 18-year-old who's just starting out as a, you know, official adult royal. And then Felipe, as the dad who's been doing this for a really long time, then got to take it and say, well, this is what it means to me and this is what I would teach you. So in the end, I liked it more than I thought I did when it first started, because I sort of thought it was like taking the same facts and each of them explaining it from their own perspectives with their own experiences.
I've become a little bit obsessed with the fact that in speeches, Royals were always like, dear Leonor. Like, no one says that in real life. No one goes like, dear Christian, dear Pa. But Royals like, right, how can I possibly address this to someone? I know, this sounds really natural. Yeah. Dear Leonor, that's so cool. it just feels really archaic. But it was, I think I really liked the fact it was addressed to Leonor. And I think it made it stand out. And it gave it, it made it feel personal without being remotely personal, because it felt like, you know, those sort of like Princess Diaries queen lessons that you imagine royals to have, like, oh, this is Felipe doing like a quick constitutional rundown for the future queen. She just happens to be on her 18th birthday in a crowd of other people who were just awkwardly listening in.
Actually, it's interesting because this was the speech, and this is going to sound really, really stupid, given everything that we've just talked about and all the things that we'd watched up to that point. But this speech was the one where I went, gosh, the Constitution is really important to Spain, isn't it? Because, like, obviously in the UK, we have certain things that the monarch has to do. They have to swear certain oaths and all that kind of thing. And we do have fundamental laws that govern the country, but it isn't a single written constitution, or it isn't a tiny number of documents that kind of have the governance of the country. So it is a slightly different thing. Like, the actual idea of a constitution is less important to us. That doesn't mean the laws are less important, but you know, we don't have this one really important governing document that decides everything. And it kind of reminded me that in Spain, there will be people there who have a very recent memory of living in Spain when it was a dictatorship under General Franco. So this was when I started to realize, like, okay, the reason this day keeps talking about the oath and keeps talking about the Constitution isn't just because that's the purpose of the day. Like, Leonor could have very easily given her speech and made it all about herself and been really personal and done, you know, what Christian or Ingrid did. And Felipe could have done exactly the same thing. There was no, once they've done the oath, there's no requirement the speech also has to be about the oath. But I think the reason wasn't just because they were there to swear on the oath. It was also because this is obviously incredibly important to, like, Spain as a culture.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, the history of Spain and the monarchy is so fascinating because they're such an old royal family, but they've also had this, like, such a recent blip when they weren't there anymore. And I think, you know, we talk about Britain not having a real constitution a lot, but these kind of sort of traditions that make up Britain are very much there for similar reasons. Like, they came into force after the Civil War, a lot of them. They were like, oh, this is what the monarch has to do now. And it's really I always forget how recent the sort of General Franco takeover of Spain was. Also, they've had such a sort of tricky last sort of 10 years almost with members of the royal family perhaps not towing that constitutional line as much as they should have. It very much felt like turning a new page, but being very, like, explicit with, this is what we are doing now. This is the future. Not ignore what's happened in the past. Ignore that kind of the issues we've had, but this is what's going to happen going forward.
Yes, you're totally right. I think it would be very easy to view this day and just say, well, she swore an oath on the Constitution, so that's why everything was about the Constitution. But I think it was actually much more than that. It was about, firstly, the sort of cultural memory in Spain of what it's like to not have a democracy, and so therefore how important and precious it is to them that they have this Constitution, and how intimately it's connected to the royal family, because Juan Carlos was a big part of ensuring democracy once he took over after Franco. So, you know, there's that part of it. And then also, as you say, it's like, it's also a way for them to kind of say, actually, we know that this is really important. And both of us are publicly committing, as the king and the heir, that we are going to follow the Constitution. And then, so that was the first part of Felipe's speech. But then I have to say, I don't know whether I just don't watch Spanish speeches and why that is. Maybe there's less footage of it because their website is so, and their social media isn't as strong. It's harder for me to find some of the footage of, like, them giving speeches and things. So I was really surprised by how much I enjoyed Felipe's speech, because, as I mentioned earlier, there's only so many ways that you can handle an 18th birthday. It's all about, like, me and your family support you. You're swearing on the Constitution. You're going to be the great future queen, la-da-da-da. But if we think about Margrethe's speech a couple of weeks ago, that was very professional, very, like, queenly, but it was all about, you are a link in a chain. You are a cog in a machine. And it felt like very matter of fact. It almost made the whole business of being a royal seem quite depressing in a way. I don't think that was her intention. I don't know if that's how it was perceived in the room. Christian seemed to really like it. But for me, watching it was a bit like, oh gosh, this is sad. But Felipe expressed the same idea, but in, like, the most optimistic way. So he talked about how their job as adults is to, and as royals, like as the king and queen, is to bequeath to her the best of Spain. And then he talked about, like, how her task is building democracy and how building democracy is exciting and always unfinished. I really liked that phrasing. So he was saying similar things of, like, you are part of a generational institution, like, I'm here and then it's going to be to you and then it's going to be to the next person. But he phrased it in a way that made it feel really like a privilege rather than a burden.
It reminded me of some of Crown Princess Victoria's speeches about Sweden and how much she clearly loves it. And it kind of came across it for Felipe, like, it was very much like, it's an honour to be the King of Spain, and it's an honour to be part of this machine going forward. And, you know, that he's building up, he's helping to create the sort of modern Spain. And one day that's Leonor's job, and one day that'll be Leonor's descendants' job. And isn't it miraculous and amazing?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it was the same sort of idea, but it was just expressed in a way that was like, isn't this incredible that we have democracy and that you get to be part of making sure that it's working? And, you know, it was a bit more uplifting. So I was really surprised because, as I say, I haven't watched many of Felipe's speeches. Maybe he's fantastic and I'm missing a trick here. But I was really surprised by how much I enjoyed it and how, even though it started off as kind of feeling like I was hearing the same things that Leonor had just said twice, it ended up with me kind of thinking, oh, no, this was a really good speech that felt in keeping with the rest of the speeches and the whole tone of the day. But still felt really uplifting and positive. And then his speech ended with a toast, which was very funny because Leonor got to drink some champagne as part of the toast because now she's old enough. And she pulled a face and Letizia was cracking up across the room or across the table looking at her when she was pulling a face. And honestly, that is exactly the perfect response because I will never understand who decided, I'm going to blame the French, but I will never understand who decided that champagne was going to be what we drink when we're celebrating because it tastes like garbage.
It's so bad. I always read, like, I remember reading a John Green book when I was in secondary school. It was like, it tastes like the stars. And I was like, wow, that's such a romantic way of putting it. And every time I drink it, I'm like, it does not taste like the stars. It's just, it tastes like tonic water. And that's disgusting. Horrible.
Yes. I know. Why can't it be like a nice fruity cocktail? Why is that not the celebratory drink?
Sugar and fruit juice. That should be what we celebrate with.
That's the alcohol I like, where you can't actually taste any of the alcohol. Or if we're going to have a disgusting tasting drink, let's all just go for like tequila and have that, you know, have dignitaries at events. It's like sucking lemons and stuff.
Like shots. Long live Spain. Shots time, guys.
Yeah, the president of some visiting country has to lick a bit of salt off his wrist. I would watch that.
I think it would just really improve state dinners.
It really would, wouldn't it? I'm coming up with so many ideas here to reform the monarchy, guys. You've got to get in line for my pearls of wisdom. I've reformed military processions. Now I'm reforming all of the drinks that we have. Like, be great. But yes, yeah, so that they had that, and it was a nice sweet moment, and it made me like her even more because that is exactly the appropriate reaction to have when you drink champagne. And then they had the lunch, which we didn't get to see, or I did on my live stream. I didn't get to see any of the lunch, which is fine. I understand why they don't show the lunches because
didn't see the lunch either.
It's just a lot of people eating. Nobody likes to be watched while they're eating, do they? Yes. So then I think after lunch, the only thing that I noticed that happened was they went out to greet the public. There were crowds who had gathered outside of the royal palace, obviously with their Spanish flags. And so there was kind of an impromptu walkabout where the royal family went out and greeted the public, shook hands with them, which was a really lovely touch because it had been a day that had been, except from them waving in the car, it had been a day that had been quite a lot, you know, a lot of it had been behind closed doors, not sort of open invitation to a lot of people. So it was really nice that they took this time to kind of actually go and say hello to the people who had possibly traveled from really far away or who, you know, had taken time out of their day to be there. So I really liked that nice little way to end the day.
I think in the build up to the day, like the Spanish royal family weren't really doing much, but like Spain was getting ready. Spain was doing a bit of celebrating. So it felt a bit like you celebrated. So this is me just doing my little thank you for celebrating me.
Yes. Yeah. And then there was a party in the evening. We didn't get to see any of that. We only got to see like people arriving. So we know some of the guest lists. We know that King Juan Carlos and Queen Sofia, who hadn't been, the former king who abdicated and his wife, hadn't been invited to any of the part of the other part of the day, but they were invited to this evening party. Infanta Cristina and Infanta Elena, who are the king's sister, so Leonor's aunts, some of their kids as well, some of the Greek royals who are related to them through Queen Sophia, and then some like friends of Leonor and things like that. So we got to see people coming in. I did see a bit of, I don't want to, you know, dwell on all of this because I think it already gets enough airtime. But I did see some people being like, oh, it's disgraceful that Queen Sophia can't go to the main event of things and blah, blah, blah. And like debating whether or not Juan Carlos and Sophia would get to go to the evening party or not. But it seemed like it was, you know, everybody's invited.
Yeah, everyone gets to come. Even exiled ex-kings can come to the evening do.
Yeah,
I saw a lot of Sophia talk.
So you can go back and listen to the fourth episode, so very early on, so long ago, almost 2 years ago, where we talked about some of the Spanish royal family's scandals and kind of why Juan Carlos had to abdicate, why he's not necessarily as well received as he was when he first became king and everybody loved him. He's made a lot of mistakes in his life, and also so has Infanta Cristina, who was, you know, on trial for something, for financial misconduct, basically. So, you know, it was obviously a day of like, let's put all of those things aside. This is for Leonor and her, you know, who she gets on with in her family, and we'll invite everybody. But I personally thought it was appropriate that Juan Carlos and Sofia weren't at the actual main event because, well, it's not, I mean, Juan Carlos can't go because he's disgraced and nobody wants him there. And so therefore, I think like it would be awkward if Sofia went, because then it would highlight the fact that Sofia's going and Juan Carlos isn't. So it's better to just have neither of them there because they would just take focus.
Yeah. And also, it's like, I get that she's her grandma, but also she is her grandma. She's not even the queen anymore. She's like the ex-queen. And this is very much like a day of the future.
Mm-hmm.
So even if, you know, they were still very sort of present in Spain and both of them, like Juan Carlos and Sofia, were very well liked, it would have felt better if neither of them were there anyway. Mm-hmm. So the fact that there were all these dramas probably made it even better that they weren't there.
Yeah, I mean, to a lot of people, Queen Sofia is a bit like a Spanish Diana, of like, she is loved. She is like
beloved.
Every time I post about her on Instagram, I get a lot of comments from people being like, she's the most beautiful queen. She will always be our queen, queen of my heart. You know, all those sorts, which is exactly the same stuff that I get whenever I post Diana stuff. So, and a lot of people kind of hate Letizia because she's not Sofia and all those sorts of things. So I think it would have been very much about Sofia if Sofia had ended up going. And that's not just because I don't really like Queen Sofia.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I was like, is this me being judged? Yeah. No, I think it's actually the right choice.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, so that was kind of the day. To finish off with some of my overarching impressions, what I think was interesting when I was writing this is like, I had this expectation that, you know, Spain do things really low key. And, you know, all of their royal stuff is basically just, it's like a registrar wedding versus a church wedding, of like, one's going to be a bit, it's the same thing, but one of them is much more toned down. And that's how I always think of like Spanish ceremonies and things. But then watching this event made me realize, actually, I'm not 100% right about that. And I don't think a lot of people are not necessarily right about the expectation that Spain is more low key, because as you kind of hinted at, there are pictures of Leonor's face up all over Madrid, like giant photographs of her face hanging off lampposts. There were huge screens that had been set up so that people could gather together and watch. There was a parade through the streets in a car. It actually wasn't low-key at all. It's not boring, it's grand. Does that make sense?
Yeah, grand is the word that I kept sort of coming back to. And it was like, I was making my notes last night and my mum was like, oh, what are you doing? I was like, I'm making my notes for the podcast. She was like, oh, are you talking about that Spanish 18-year-old? And I was like, how do you know about this? It's like, you didn't bring up Christian's 18th. Well, I did that a couple of years. Like, what? How did this reach you? But yeah, so it's somehow been like the biggest of the 18-year-olds' birthdays. And it felt the most royal of all of them. You know, it felt so important compared to everyone else's. Not everyone else's birthdays weren't important, but they were birthdays as well, as and this just felt like a very important day. And it also, every time we have one of these 18th birthdays, I mean, I have no memory of William's 18th at all, but I just don't think there was a massive parade through the streets when
he
did a sit down TV interview and he waved on a balcony and then had a solemn oath and a dinner. Like, people always talk about how Britain are really like big on ceremony and they go, you know, over the board. I'm like, no, actually, maybe we don't. We do significantly less for the royals than everyone else seems to do.
Yeah, like what's William's next big birthday? Is it his 50th?
50th, yeah.
I would be willing to bet that there are not giant screens set up across London and flags of William's face hanging around because of it's his 50th birthday. And 50 is a significant birthday. Or if Charles died tomorrow and George's 18th birthday or his 21st or any significant birthday, there would not be anything like this. And yeah, it's so interesting to me because I think it exposes the fact that, and I'm guilty of this as well, all of us are, I think, to a degree, we think something is being like grand and royal because it has tiaras and gowns and like, oh, it's exciting because they're all it together in their tiaras. But actually, that's just one way of being grand and, you know, exciting and whatever. This was a very, very different kind of event. This felt more to me like a coronation than an 18th, to be honest. It felt more like Charles's coronation. In a way, it was more royal, because the thing that is royal is not the tiaras and the gowns. It's actually the constitutional responsibility. It's the exercising of power. It, you know, that's what is actually a monarchy and what is actually royal. And so we have, you know, we all like the pretty frivolous things and like the history of the tiaras and all that kind of fun stuff. But this, that wasn't the purpose of this event. It wasn't setting out to be fun and exciting. It was setting out to be important. And I think it really, really achieved that. And, you know, in our Christian episode, so that was two episodes ago, How Do You Do, Fellow Young People, it's called, we spoke about how our, I think we both, I would, this is an accurate assessment of how we both felt, of our biggest issue with Christian's birthday was that it felt disjointed. It felt like it didn't really know what it was supposed to be. And possibly that's because he's like the heir to the heir rather than the heir to the throne. But it just, it felt a bit like, I don't really know what this event is supposed to be. Now, I from a personal level, I really enjoy the personal touch that like the Norwegian royals had. I think they had a really good mix. They did mention like the values of Norway and how much they love Norway, but it was a very like, it was somebody's 18th birthday. But I also think that liking the personal approach or not is an entirely subjective thing. There is absolutely nothing wrong with having it be a very impersonal event and having it be very, very formal, especially if that's what kind of the event itself dictates. What's the most important thing is not whether or not it's a personal thing or a professional thing. It's that whatever approach you take, you commit to it. And I felt like they recognized that this event was about the constitution, and so they were going the more formal route, but it worked because they really, really committed to it. So, you know, with Christians, I didn't really feel like I got a sense of who he was or what his understanding of his role was. In Norway, I got a really good sense of who Ingrid was and what her personal values are and what she loves about Norway. In Spain, I still don't really know much about Leonor as a person, but I feel like I know a lot about Leonor as a future queen.
Yeah. And it felt Spanish. Like, it felt like the day was about Leonor in Spain. Like, it wasn't about a royal. It was about Spain at its heart. Like, there weren't, you know, obviously at this private party, there were other royals, but they were all predominantly deposed royals and they were family or, you know, family friends. It wasn't like a big royal tiara-led extravaganza. And I would like to remind people of this in 8 years when George is 18 and doesn't have a massive...
They're all like, Ingrid had a tiara. Estelle's going to have a tiara.
I'd like to bring this one up because obviously Britain is not going to suddenly in 8 years do a complete 180 in the way they approach the world. But it worked. And I think if it had... had the tiaras, it wouldn't have made it worse, but it almost sort of lessened the impact because it felt so significant and serious that like a tiara would be like frivolous on top. It made me quite excited to see kind of like what Leonor does next. Like, she's in the military at the moment, but there's a lot of sort of rumors that she's then going to go on and study law like Felipe did. She does a lot of royal work anyway compared to a lot of the other heirs, and she has since she was 13 and kind of became the Princess of Asturias in public. But she's almost going to be out of the game a bit because she's going to be doing military things, which, you know, you can't always get time off to do royal things from. So it does make me sort of really fascinated to see like how much of Leonor we're going to see over the next few years and how big a role she's going to take, because she can clearly hold her own in a room full of statesman. So
thank you for joining us for this episode this week. We hope that all of our diehard Spanish royal family fans enjoyed this episode, because we get a lot of calls to talk more about Spanish royals, so we had a whole episode just for you. Yeah, but hopefully we'll be back again next week. Please do rate us 5 stars wherever you listen to your podcast, because it really helps and makes us feel good. Other than that, I think I will see you next week. So it is a goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.